Good morning, and welcome to Greater Good. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Studios in Flagstaff. The Greater Good Science Center studies the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being, and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. And now, some articles from Greater Good. Who are the most lonely Americans? A new report looked at who is lonely and how Americans reach out for support across different genders and ages. By Kira M. Newman, March 18, 2025. One in six Americans feel lonely or isolated most of the time. This finding comes from a survey conducted in September 2024 by the Pew Research Center, which queried over 6,200 adults in English and Spanish about their well-being and social connections. The report, titled Men, Women, and Social Connections, reveals how different groups of Americans are faring these days by looking at trends across gender, age, and other factors. In the process, it reveals how complicated loneliness can be. Men aren't lonelier, but they are less connected. Part of the impetus for the report was the so-called male loneliness epidemic, the struggles that modern men seem to be having around connection and intimacy. Since 1990, according to the 2021 American Perspectives Survey, American men's friendship groups have declined more than women's, although guys arguably started in better shape. In the Pew report, 20% of men said that they had no close friends, compared to 17% of women. Pew, however, found that women are just as lonely as men. Across men and women, 16% of adults felt lonely all or most of the time. About 38% were sometimes lonely, and 47% were hardly ever or never lonely. At the same time, though, there are some indications that men are less socially connected than women. When they need emotional support, about 3/4 of men and women are very likely to rely on their spouse or partner. No gender differences there. But for other sources of support, a parent, friend, other family member, or online community, women are more likely to ask for help than men. At the high end of 44% of women are very likely to reach out to family members beyond their parents or spouses, compared to only 26% of men. Even thinking about their fathers, almost 1/3 of women are very likely to reach out for support, compared to 27% of men. Notably, 22% of women are very likely to reach out to a mental health professional versus only 16% of men. Even if men aren't feeling lonely more often than women, when they do feel like they need support, they may not be getting it to the extent that women are, says Kim Parker, Pew's Director of Social Trends Research and a co-author of the report. Gender norms around giving and receiving support may be playing a role here, based on the sources of support people reach out to. For example, nearly half of respondents were very likely to reach out to their mothers when they need emotional support, while only 28% said the same about their fathers. Reaching out is a soft skill. It suggests that you have needs. So men are definitely going to have a hard time reaching out, says researcher Niobe Way, who has been interviewing boys and young men for nearly 4 decades. They've been taught by our culture that it's not only girly, it's lame. In general, men also tend to keep in touch less with their friends. While 77% of women interact with friends at least a few times a week, whether by text, phone, video, social media, or in person, only 70% of men do the same. The effects of these differences in support and socializing may not be showing up in how lonely men feel, but they may be showing up in other ways. The younger you are, the lonelier. Pew separated respondents into 4 age groups: younger than 30, 30s and 40s, 50 to 64, and 65 and older. As you travel through these age groups, fewer and fewer people feel lonely or isolated most of the time. From nearly a quarter of Americans under 30 to 20% in their 30s and 40s, 11% of people ages 50 to 64, and just 6% of over 65s. But younger people appear to stay in touch with friends more, at least digitally. Through text or social media, more Americans under 30 are communicating with a friend at least a few times a week compared to each older age group in turn. They're also more likely to see a friend in person at least a few times a week compared to adults aged 30 to 64. Are these connections not enough to stave off loneliness? Young people may be connecting all the time with the outside world, but that might not really be feeding them, says Parker. It may not be that surprising that older people are faring better. Research suggests that loneliness is more about expectations than reality, about how much social connection we have versus how much we want, rather than the number of minutes we spend in the company of others. So it's possible that people over 65 simply may be more content with the connections they have. Still, these findings add to the worries that young people are not okay, which was a theme of last year's World Happiness Report. Finding places to connect. The survey also asked respondents what they thought about organized social groups and spaces meant only for women or only for men. That might include moms or dads groups, women's meetups, or religious organizations. These groups and places, at their best, can give people opportunities to strengthen connections and fight loneliness. Society's opinions about them matter because it can influence whether we choose to participate and how we think others might perceive us for doing so. In general, Pew found that women's only groups and places are looked upon more favorably by both men and women. Women and men believed that women's groups benefited women and society more than men's groups benefited men and society. Interestingly, these differences were even more pronounced among Democratic respondents, whereas Republican respondents saw similar value in men's and women's groups. Democrats, who are more likely to believe women face a great deal of discrimination these days, seem to be more skeptical about all male spaces. These findings give us a peek into the state of loneliness in America today and the ways that it might be shaped by our social norms. For an individual, fighting loneliness might look like going out to make friends and questioning some unhelpful beliefs that we have. But for a society, there's a lot more that we could do to support our universal human needs, needs that transcend gender, politics, and age, for connection and belonging. About the author, Kira M. Newman is the managing editor of Greater Good. Her work has been published in outlets including The Washington Post, Mindful Magazine, Social Media Monthly, and Tech.co. She is co-author of the forthcoming The Science of Happiness Workbook and co-editor of The Gratitude Project. You are listening to Greater Good Magazine, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. Why is loneliness so bad for your health? A new study finds that loneliness may increase certain proteins in the brain that increase your risk for disease and death. By Barbara Jacqueline Chacane, Christelle Langley, Chun Shen, and Jian Feng Feng, March 14, 2025. Human beings are inherently social. We thrive on connection, communication, and shared experiences, which help shape our identities and foster a sense of belonging. Yet, in an increasingly digital and fast-paced world, feelings of loneliness and social isolation have become alarmingly common. The World Health Organization has stated that these feelings are widespread. About 25% of older people experience social isolation, and 5 to 15% of adolescents feel lonely. These figures are important since published studies have demonstrated that social isolation and loneliness are linked to increased risk of disease and death. Indeed, our own study published in 2022 found that social isolation in older people carried a 26% increased risk of developing dementia. We also found that loneliness was associated with depression. We wanted to follow up our previous study by understanding the underlying biological processes behind this link between social isolation and loneliness and health. Why is loneliness so bad for our bodies and our minds? Exploring proteins. We focused on proteomics, the study of proteins. This is because we know that proteins play a role in gene expression, the process by which the information encoded in a gene is turned into biological activity. Proteins are also a major source of drug targets for developing medications. In this collaborative study between the University of Cambridge and Fundan University, published in Nature Human Behavior, we used data from 42,062 participants from the UK Biobank and studied 2,920 plasma proteins. We investigated the association between proteins and self-reported loneliness and social isolation. We discovered that the proteins found to be significantly associated with loneliness and social isolation are also known to be implicated in inflammation as well as antiviral and immune responses. In particular, our study suggested that loneliness may lead to an increase in the levels of 5 specific expressed proteins in the brain, known as GFRA1, ADM, FABP4, TNFRSF10A, and ASGR1. In other words, all the proteins we identified as related to loneliness were positively associated, meaning that people who feel lonely tend to have higher protein levels compared to those who do not feel lonely. We also studied data that tracked the health of our participants for about 14 years. This found that more than half of the proteins were linked to cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, stroke, and death. Based on our findings, having good social relationships and not feeling lonely may promote health by reducing the levels of certain harmful proteins. However, proteins may only partly explain the link between loneliness and health. Other potential pathways, such as social stress, may also play a role. To our knowledge, this may be the first demonstration of how loneliness affects morbidity and mortality through its association with these 5 key proteins. Societal impacts. Social isolation and loneliness affect all ages and genders and lead to major mental and physical health problems. This study helps to understand how this happens on a biological level. It demonstrates how important it is to connect with others through social activities, for example, volunteering or team sport. This can reduce the effects of social isolation and loneliness on the underlying biological processes important for health outcomes. While technology offers new ways to stay in touch, it can sometimes lead to superficial connections that leave us feeling more disconnected than ever. This paradox, being surrounded by digital interactions, yet feeling profoundly alone, underscores the importance of deep, meaningful social connections. Face-to-face social interactions, where you also experience nonverbal communication, often fosters better connections. Indeed, one study showed that partners communicating face-to-face had more positive impressions than people interacting via a computer. Social interactions are ultimately essential for our well-being, boosting both physical and mental health. Social connections reduce stress, lower blood pressure, and support immune function. They also enhance cognitive health and improve brain health. In addition, they can foster empathy and understanding, strengthening our minds and providing emotional resilience. Clearly, to foster a flourishing society, we need to build meaningful connections with one another. About the authors. Barbara Jacqueline Sakhin PhD, is a professor of clinical neuropsychology at the University of Cambridge. Christelle Langley, PhD, is a postdoctoral research associate in cognitive neuroscience at the University of Cambridge. Chun Shen, PhD, is a postdoctoral research fellow of neuroscience at Fundan University. And Jian Feng Feng, PhD, is a professor of science and technology for brain-inspired intelligence and computer science at Fundan University. You are listening to Greater Good Magazine, being brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. And here's a Greater Good in Action practice entitled Feeling Supported, recalling how others have comforted us can make us more compassionate. How to do it. Time required. 15 minutes. Try to do this practice once a month to sustain your feelings of trust and connection. How to do it. Number one, make a list of the people who offer you comfort or security. If it's helpful, you can consider, who is the person you most like to spend time with? Who is the person it is hardest to be away from? Who is the person you want to talk to when you are worried about something? Who is the person you turn to when you're feeling down? Who is the person you know will always be there for you? Who is the person you want to share your successes with? Some of these might be the same person. Number two, write down 6 positive qualities that are common to some or all of these people, qualities that they strongly demonstrate. Three, next, recall and visualize a specific situation when you were feeling distressed or worried, and one of these people comforted and helped you. Four, write a brief description of that situation and the way that you felt during it. Why you should try it. Most of us want to be kind and caring, but that can be easier said than done, especially when we feel stressed, threatened, or insecure. Often in those moments, our natural reaction is to focus on ourselves and make sure that we're safe instead of paying attention to other people's needs and supporting them. But disconnecting from others can actually exacerbate our stress. This exercise helps free you from that downward spiral. It asks you to think about the people you turn to when you're distressed and recall times when you felt comforted by them. Research suggests that increasing momentary feelings of comfort by thinking about supportive relationships can make us more trusting, compassionate, and helpful toward others in general. Why it works. A great deal of research points to the importance of attachment security, a state that involves feelings of trust and comfort. When we feel safe and secure, our energy can be more easily directed toward caring for others. Reflecting on the people in our life who love and support us can increase our feelings of security and also remind us of the kind of qualities we want to embody when supporting others, thereby making us more likely to respond compassionately when we encounter someone in need. Evidence that it works. Some study participants reflected on a supportive relationship by engaging in this writing exercise. Other participants thought about an acquaintance or a professional relationship. Immediately afterwards, the people who reflected on the supportive relationship reported greater compassion for and willingness to help a person in distress. You have been listening to Greater Good Magazine, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, thanking you so much for listening today and wishing you a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.